hopefully they'll understand me.
Most of the time they have people understanding me, so they'll understand you.
Okay.
Because I get loud, and then I break speakers.
Yeah.
You know, before we start, we have Rodrigo Torres right here. What's up, fool?
What's happening, Rodrigo, in the house?
Felipe Esparza. We have a special guest right here, all the way from Pico Gardens, housing projects, and when he moved out of the projects, across the street. He's one of the people, man, that I was like, yeah, I know somebody who doesn't live in the projects. He lives across the street, behind the alley. And we're going to introduce him right now, but I'm going to just tell you a little bit about him, how I met him. When I first got to Boyle Heights, I lived across the street from a park called Pecan Park. But if you guys are listening to here who know the park, you probably say, oh, I know Piss Can. So so we live across the street by this building, and I used to see this man carry a bag full of baseballs and bats and helmets. And he used to coach Little League across the street from the park, and I didn't know anybody. So I started playing across the street at the park. Every time, after batting practice, they would lose a baseball or something, and I'd go find it and keep it. And so this one day, there was this lady across next to me who lived across from me. I think her name, I don't know her name, but she was an old Mexican woman, and she lived by herself, and she had a lot of dolls next door. Like, her whole house was dolls. She had a lot of dolls. And she was picking up cans or just walking her dog, and I was standing there with my brother, and she found a bag full of balls and bats. And I guess Ray Escalera had forgot them, right? So I saw that as an opportunity to get in. I said, I will befriend this guy. And I was a little kid. I'd probably been 12. But, you know, I already knew how to be manipulative, probably. Or because of selling my mom's Avon, I knew how to sell myself. So I saw that this lady saw me. And she goes, do you know who these balls are? I said, kind of. And so I know whose balls those are. And then she said, can you tell him, you know, if he needs them? I said, yeah, he's going to need those balls. And then he goes, tell him who has them. And I said, yeah, or you could just give it to me, you know, and I'll give it to him. And she said, nah, I'll give it to him. I would open up my own little league or something, she probably thought, you know. This lady, I think she was a hoarder, man. She had a million dolls in her house. So one day I saw Ray, and he was like he knew that he didn't have the balls, you know, so he showed up. And I felt bad because he had like a bag. And they had, like, brand new balls. And I was like, damn, man, this is some badass balls. Then I walked up to him and I told him, hey, Ray, did you lose your I know you lost your balls, and or your assistant coach left them behind, Paul or Bobby or Larry or somebody, Larry Moe or Jack. So he said, yes, how did you know? And I said, yeah, the woman over there. And he knew the lady, like, he knew what lady it was. And he goes, thank you. And that fool bought me a Pepsi. He bought me a Pepsi, and he said, yeah, man, anytime you want to hang out, come hang out. And let me tell you, man, every time I caused damage at that park, you know, this is before I lived in the projects, I would use him, hey, man, I found Ray Escalera's balls, okay? And they would leave me alone. Like, this guy named Joe at the park, he would see me, like, turning on the water, you know, or the man. Remember that? Okay, so we're here with Ray Escalera, by the way, a friend of mine. He's a Vietnam veteran. I knew that because everybody would ask me. I would tell people, you know, how come he talk like that? Oh, man, this fool walked into a minefield. Or everybody had a story, Ray. Like, they say that, oh, man, you know how it is. In Vietnam, they would put Mexicans and blacks in the front lines so they could get shot first. And white people can get all the medals. So everybody had a story. Like, I remember some guy said, what happened, bro? He used to be a boxer, bro. You know, or stuff like that. But we're here with the man, the myth, the legend, the coach, father of Pico Gardens, a very good man. That this guy was like a mentor to everybody. Like, if you needed porn, he had it. Nah, just kidding. Nah, man. He was just a good dude. A good dude. Like, he would tell you, hey, where's my red tape? Nah. Nah, he was a good dude. Like, this guy was one of those guys, you know, in the neighborhood that you need to, like, you just, no matter where he's at, he will always tell you hello. Like, even if you're down on your luck, he will always pass by and say, hey, how you doing? And he'll always, no matter what you're doing, you will straighten up your mouth, fix your breath, and go, hey, Ray Escalera, how you doing there? And they will just go back to walk around being crazy again. Nobody wanted to be or look like a fool around Ray Escalera. Like, if he knew you as a little boy, and now you're a fuck-up, a PCP or something, if you see Ray coming, you will go across the street. Like, if you would rather see your mom see you all tore up than Ray Escalera. So that's how I got to know him. And a lot of you guys have seen me do interviews where I talk about how did I start being a comedian. Well, Ray Escalera's house. My brother Angel, he was a good friend of his son, Ray Escalera, because Ray Escalera used to coach my brother Angel. They were the A's. Or back then, they weren't really the A's. They were the team with the letter A. Because back then, man, the major leagues had marketing, and you couldn't really Pecan Park. We couldn't really have like we didn't have that many good uniforms. If you were the Dodgers, you were just a team with the letter D, or you were sponsored by Jim Burgers or Bell yeah. Bondsman, or the back of your T-shirt will say Allen B's. Ray Escalera, but Dr. Bar, Ray Escalera was good at marketing, man. He would knock at people's houses. Hey, Arrieta Market, what's up? So we're here with, let's introduce yourself. Ray Escalera, how you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great, Felipe. I'm just trying to hang in there, that's all.
Was that crazy, reminiscing?
Yeah, and it's still going on because I missed where I came from, and I go there once in a while just to go back to where my roots are from.
It's funny, like, we were just talking, you know, I was talking to people, like, they always, like, there's actually a page called Pico Aliso page on Facebook, where everybody from the projects, they throw in little things. Do you remember this? Do you remember that? It's like you might be from Pico Aliso if Ray Escalera taught you how to throw a curve. Or you might be from Aliso, Pico Aliso if Lou Hazen made you do push-ups for an hour. That was my coach. It's another guy. It's an old man. I think he was German. Was he German?
No. I don't know what it was. He was just a good guy. Good man.
He was another veteran, right?
Yes. And he had polio, and he still went out there and gave up his time to work with kids.
He was my first coach. You know, like, when I started playing across the street from the park, like when I found one of your balls, it was funny because we were playing baseball right there, and Lou Hazen was walking around, and then somebody said, hey, bro, that's the guy who coaches, huh? I said, yeah, bro. I think he's looking for guys to coach for Little League next season. All right, bro, throw me an underhand pitch, eh? So he threw me an underhand pitch with a hard ball, and I whacked it. And Lou Hazen turned around. I mean, his whole body didn't turn around. He just turned his waist. And he saw. He goes, my God. And I hit the ball far, right? But he didn't see that the ball was pitched underhand. I swear to God, or I kid you not, when they were picking players, man, he made the worst mistake of his life. He picked me first.
An imposter.
He picked me first, and I said, oh, my God. Oh, man, the pressure is on. I'm going to start doing a lot of push-ups.
And Mr. Escalera, are you from Boyle Heights? Is that where you grew up?
Yeah, no, I'm from the country. I came from Fresno. Okay. From a farmers. We used to live in camps where our families would work in the fields.
Oh, you were a migrant worker?
Yes.
You guys came from another state or from Mexico?
No, from Fresno.
Fresno?
From that San Joaquin Valley right there?
There you go. That's it. San Joaquin Valley.
So it's funny. It's like there's a comedian that does a joke, you know, and sometimes I do it too. He goes, man, my father, he was a boxer. My dad was a boxer. Yeah, they boxed grapes, tomatoes, oranges.
Armando Casillo. And when did you get to Boyle Heights?
In 1959.
1959?
Yeah, my first day at Pickle Gardens, I got beat up pretty bad.
That's the project for you, man.
In 59?
Yeah, I got beat up because the kid left the swing and I went and got on it, so I wouldn't get off and he beat me up. That's okay, because I told my nephew, and he came over, he told me, where is he? I told him, he went and beat him up.
Keep the cycle going.
Yeah. So he helped me out that day.
How old were you?
At that time, 13.
So you moved into the projects in 59?
Yes.
Were the housing projects back then the same as they were when I was there?
No.
No? It was smaller or more dirt?
No, they had, you know, it's a pavement. They didn't have water. It's basically all pavement. It wasn't cement.
Oh. You know?
But everything else, basically, if you remember, the projects were different, were all the same color.
Yeah, they were green.
Yeah, they were blue.
They were blue back then?
All blue, every one of them. Okay. And then one day they started painting them different, you know.
Were the projects all Latino when you were there?
No. Most of it, I would say 75% to 80%, it was black.
Black?
Wow.
Yes. But the lethal side was almost 100%.
They were deep over there, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It was different.
When did you start seeing you were one of the first Latino Mexicans Americans to move into the Pico Gardens? Well, there were already a lot of them, or Native Americans.
There was a few families already living there when I got there.
What family was living there when you got there that was still living there when I got there? Amadores, no?
Yeah, Freddy and... I would have to say yes. Yes.
The Amador family was there first?
Well, you know what? I don't remember what year you came in.
I came in 79.
Oh, God. You know what? No, they were already there.
Oh.
They were already there.
Yeah. When I talked to I talked to other people from the housing projects we grew up at, like the Enos. Enos?
Yeah.
Rodney Enos, right. Robert Enos, Nelson, who doesn't drink no more.
Yeah.
Taya. Yeah. And they tell me that they moved in 63 or 67, they told me they moved in there.
I don't remember the time, but the Eno family, well, like Coach, one of the girls, and my son used to hang around with the brothers.
So once you grew up right there, when did you start working? Because I remember I read on your Facebook, on your son's Facebook, that you used to work for a man who I just seen a couple of times, George, of he owned property, right?
George Barnes.
George Barnes?
Yeah.
Because you used to work at the liquor store, didn't you?
Yes.
When you were a kid?
Yeah. But I was only getting $25 a week for 12 hours a day.
Damn.
That was under the table.
That was way under the table, man. That's like under the rug.
Huh? Oh, okay. He was violating child labor laws.
Yeah. Yeah, there was no child labor laws, I don't think. I started working at 12 years old, running a company called Magic Stuff California in Glendale.
Magic Stuff?
No, well, there was the ceramics.
Oh.
But without me, they couldn't do anything because I'm the one that mixed all the chemicals and everything. And from what I did, everybody else was able to do the job. So if I didn't show up, you know, I'd be in a lot of trouble.
At 12?
At 12 years old.
So I think Glendale, right?
Yes.
Was Glendale called Tropical back then?
No.
It was all Glendale, huh?
Yeah.
Were there a lot of Armenians already, Russians?
Yes.
Yep. Even at that time, there was already?
Oh. Yeah. She was working over there.
My friend, come on, my friend.
Yeah.
And how were you traveling from Boyle Heights to Glendale at that time?
A bus.
The RTD.
I would get a, as soon as I got out of school at 12, I'd go home, catch the bus downtown, and then I'd go to work and get out at 2 in the morning, and then I would come back home all white because the stuff that I made is brown, but once it dried, it's all white. You know, I'd come home like a snowman every day.
You were 12?
I was 12.
Wow. It's funny, like, right now people are listening, saying to themselves, I would never let my son get on a bus when he's 12. There's people out there who are shocked that there's kids. But people, let me tell you, it was a different time. You know, people needed money, man. And there was more jobs for 12-year-old.
You know what? That's absolutely true because when we came to Los Angeles, we never had switches, light switches.
Light switches?
Yeah, so we used to play with them. I said, look, it turns on the light, you know? And then we had a toilet. And said, when you flushed it, everything went down. We never had a toilet. We never had running water in the house. My mom used to take us a shower in Athena, you know, like a big old round, I guess, bucket. Yeah, big one.
One of those big old redneck jacuzzis.
Yeah. And then we used to use the restroom in the coffee can. Each one of us had our own can. Folgers was my favorite.
The preferred can.
Your own Folgers can?
You had your own Folgers can? Yeah. I have memories. Yeah. I wish I could have saved it.
That was your restroom? A Folgers can?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, every night.
You had to be precise to make it in that little can, huh?
Oh, yeah, but we had little butts then. No.
It's not like now, man.
No, not now.
Fill it to the rim with brim.
Yeah, so moving to L.A. was really, you know, something else. Because, you know, we came from a farm. We worked on the farm. We come to Los Angeles.
The big city.
And we think, God, look at this. It has walls. It's so smooth because we didn't have walls. We had just the studs. That's all we had, you know, the piece of wood.
If you say, like, we have a three-bedroom house over here, but you put up the curtains.
Yeah, there you go. That's what we used to do.
It was all framed out, and then you didn't have any drywall, I'm sure, or insulation.
No,
that.
We didn't have drywall, nothing like that.
Straight
you know?
Up Casas de Madera style.
Yeah, yeah, that's all. And then we come here and say, no more farming, that's it. What happens, we wind up in Anaheim picking strawberries and asparagus, you know.
What years were those?
That was in probably 70, wait a minute, no. Yeah, in about 61, 62.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, right there where the place that he's talking about where he picks strawberries and asparagus, That place is called Disney, California Disney now.
Yep.
And that's where it used to be. Because I remember me and my brother Angel and BB. Remember BB?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we found a wallet with $80 at Dodger Stadium. And the next day, we took the bus, the 460, to Disneyland. And it stopped right there on where California Disney is right now. And we went to Disneyland to sneak in.
Is that the one on Hollywood Boulevard that you
took? Yeah. That's where that's where the bus stops. Exactly, by Sears. Yes.
Yeah.
The 460.
That's right.
And we went to Disneyland, and if you guys don't know, that's where he picked strawberries at, on California Disney.
Yep. Long time ago. Long time ago.
California Adventure, actually. That's where... Yeah. That's where the strawberry fields used to be before they built, because they were there for a while.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. Be honest with you, nothing existed there. Disneyland wasn't as big as it is now, you know?
Was Disneyland open already?
Yeah.
But it was tiny, huh?
Well, a lot smaller than it is now, you know? Now it's real big.
You know, it's funny, man, they built California Adventure, they build Disney, but the employees are still Mexican, except they're not picking strawberries, they're giving you a soda. Or they're cleaning the toilets.
We have a friend of ours, Gracie Pollock, who used to live right here in the projects. She's been working at California Disney about 20 years.
Gracie been working there for 20 years?
Yeah, and one day she met a friend of mine who worked at Pecan. He went and got a job at Disneyland too. And they were talking, and she said, "I used to have a boyfriend named Ray. He was in Vietnam." I said, "Would you happen to know him?" She goes, "Sure, I know him. I got his number. You want a picture of him?" And she couldn't believe it, you know. I mean, when you find someone just like that, it's weird.
Well,
know?
Grace kept it a secret for 20 years working there, man. If she would have told everybody, we would all got it free. You know what happened when you live in the projects, man? We're like a little enclosed village. We're like outside of Los Angeles. When they mention Boyle Heights, they're not thinking about us. They're thinking about east of Boyle Street. Or once you get up 1st and Boyle, 4th and Boyle, 6th and Boyle, 7th and Boyle, east of that is what they consider Boyle Heights. Because we're like the flats. We're by the Pico Aliso housing projects. There was no – if you want to walk to Safeway, you would have to walk with 6 people or else – you're going to get confronted by 3 different gangs on the way to the market. And 3rd Street was ready. Like when we used to walk to school, it would have to be like, we couldn't just walk to school like a normal kid. We had the project route. Go around the tunnels. Remember the tunnels?
Yes. Yes.
Go through the park.
Remember, I don't know if the bridge was still there. There was a bridge that went, you know, afterwards they made a small bridge. But they used to have a big old bridge that took a drive over.
Over the bridge, before they built the 5, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The 6th Street Bridge.
Because on 6th Street, there's a corner, and there's like a yard, looks like a yard, like a little park. That was all part of Hollenbeck Park, you know? And people, in the old times, you could drive over that bridge. But it doesn't exist anymore, you know? I don't know when they took it down, just like the Angel Flight, when I used to go down there and deliver papers. I'd get up at 2 in the morning and go down there and get all my papers together and then go start delivering them to the Ambassador Hotel. I used to run the 3rd Street Tunnel. And, you know, I went through a lot as a kid. that we had to do something to make money. Shine shoes. I used to be good at shining shoes.
Where did you shine shoes at? Downtown?
Downtown. Central Market.
Central Market?
That was where you went.
Did you ever make... there used to be a guy when I was in rehab who lived in Echo Park, and he used to shine shoes. And all the Rampart police officers used to drop off his shoes, and sometimes, like, but he was a heroin addict. But he was shining shoes. He said that he used to make that noise when he's buffing them make it sound like he's buffing them real good. Did you ever make that noise?
Yeah.
If you ever get your shoe shines, and if you hear this noise, that's not your shoes. That's the shoe shine guy making you think that he's buffing them. That's a trick, huh?
Yeah, if you really shine shoes, you hear that flapping.
Pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa.
That's a shoe shiner, you know? And I was good at my job, yeah?
Did you have the whole shoe shop, the shoe box gear, or did you make your own one?
I made my own one, me and my friend Mike. He's the one that really used to try to find jobs. So wherever he went, he would tell me. And, you know, I'd go join him, sell newspapers on 7th Street, 7th and Alameda, and Central and all that area. And then when I started my own route, they would pay me $40 to deliver throughout downtown L.A.
A week or a day?
A month.
A month. Damn.
That was L.A. Times?
Yeah. Yeah.
$40 a month. And how were you?
At that time, probably around 14. Yeah, about 14. Yeah.
So that was probably your second job then?
I did all kinds of stuff, you know. I mean, the only thing I didn't do was sell oranges. But that's the big thing now.
I know, man. You know what's funny? Like, growing up, where you grew up, because we both grew up in the same spot, I think every kid had a hustle. Like, every kid, whether it was the legitimate way or the illegitimate way, every kid I knew growing up had a hustle. Because when I was a kid, I don't know, man, I used to go to the factories, like, at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning with my brother Angel and David and all the kids, and we would go to the watermelon factory. And they would throw watermelons away that were rotten.
Yeah.
But we would clean them up and stuff our shopping cart full of watermelons. And then we'll sell them to the employees on the way home for $1 each.
No.
Did you ever hit the pickle factory?
Yes. They also used to be in Aliso Village with a pickle factory.
Yeah.
And I never went there because I heard that everybody used to steal pickles from there and sell them. One time, this guy from Pimera Flats, I was at the swimming pool, and this guy brought a whole barrel full of pickles, and he was telling everybody to grab a pickle, but when I put my hand in there, there were sliced pickles. So I got a sliced pickle. So during those times when you were around... making those $12 a week at the supermarket or at the liquor store, and delivering papers for $40 a month. When did you like start associating yourself with Pecan Park and playing Little League? Did you play Little League there?
I wound up. They found me on the pitcher's mound at Pecan Park, drunk. I gave up on my life. I had no more reason to live. So, as I was asleep, this young man came and he woke me up and asked me if I would move. And I said yes. And then I asked him, what are you going to do? He says, we're going to practice baseball. I go, oh, okay. And then I was really drunk. I said, where's your coach? You know, we don't have one. And I just looked at him and I said, I'll be your coach. And, you know, they looked at each other like, yeah, right, you're going to be here, you know? So what happened?
You had Walter Matthau, how bad he was Bears.
So what happened, I tell them, okay, look, I'll be here tomorrow, okay, at 10 o'clock, all right? And they thought I wouldn't be there, and sure enough, I showed up. And from that point on, I had a reason to live. It began really with children.
So this was after Vietnam?
Yes, after Vietnam.
So when you got drafted or you volunteered?
No, I volunteered.
Like a soldier, people.
No.
Like a soldier, people. He volunteered.
No.
No.
They either gave us 2, 3, or 4, and I said, just give me 2. I'll volunteer. That's why.
I thought it was like the Richard Pryor. I thought you were gonna say it was like the Richard Pryor joke, how they were drafting people in Vietnam, go to jail or go to war. Orale. Ray's wife just cut in. Lupita said that he didn't want to. Her mother forced him to join because he got her pregnant. Is it your oldest? What son was this?
What son?
Raul. Raleigh. Yeah, so what happened was the wife just said that she was pregnant, and Ray said, well, got to go to the Army, get a medal. Marines, my bad.
Yeah, Marine Corps. It doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah? Well, where was your first boot camp? Where was your boot camp? Like your first, that was like, when you left Los Angeles, was that your first time leaving California?
LA?
Yeah. Yes.
Where did they ship you to?
San Diego.
Oh, for a
boot camp training.
El Toro or Pendleton?
No, MCRD. That's the Marine Corps Recruit Training Depot.
Oh.
Yeah, and I was only there at that time because of the war, only 8 weeks. Once you did the 8 weeks, they give you 30 days, and then you're off the war.
A 30-day off?
30-day off.
So what did you do for those 30 days? Got married?
Oh, I had a... You know what? Yeah, we did get married. Yeah, we got married.
So you were 19 years old. That's the time I had my kid, too, 19.
Yeah.
No, I didn't join the service, man. I joined the Salvation Army. So, how was boot camp? They trained you as a Marine for 8 weeks with a drill sergeant and
At that time, yes.
Was it all Chicanos, all Mexican, or all mixed?
It was mixed, but the history of the Marine Corps, especially during the Vietnam War, more Latinos came from East Alebo Heights.
Modesto.
In those areas? No. In Destin, Boyle Heights, and that area?
East LA.
Than any other city, you know. And when I heard that, because they announced it, you know, I said, damn, you know, we did our job. Latinos, you know, got in there and did what we had to do, you know. And no other city can claim that. But we can, you know. So at least I kind of like that.
Very cool.
That's good. Most of the people they drafted were from East LA and Boyle Heights, bro, because we're killers.
A lot of the guys, they signed up.
They signed up,
They
huh?
signed up, yeah. You know, in the project, at that time, what do you have? Nothing. There's nothing for you.
Nothing.
Nothing. You know, what kind of work are you going to do as a kid? You know, you're 18 years old, you're on welfare, you don't have no money, You can't go to college because you have to pay for everything, bus, everything. So what other choice do you have?
And keep in mind, people, that our address is the projects, and there's a lot of warehouses, businesses, million-dollar businesses all around our neighborhood. But every time we would try to apply there, and once they knew our address or you live in the projects, they will rip the application. They did not hire nobody from the projects, people. Not till Father Gray came in, not till 30 years later. Am I right or wrong?
You're right.
Damn.
Absolutely right. Father Gray, you know, at first, a lot of people didn't care for him because he was only helping the guys that were involved with the gangs. But as time went on, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I've seen a lot of changes. Father Greg went through a lot to do what he had to do. And now, you know, when you see what he's done, I mean, what more do we want? You know, as long as he's there, people will always fly, you know, go to him for help. And he helped him out, you know. So I'm grateful for that. You know, even though I don't live there, I know that, you know, a lot of people out there are being helped, and that's great.
Yeah, Father Greg Boyle, he's the guy that he's a priest, and he used to have a youth program on Fridays. And he's the guy that sent me to rehab when I quit messing around 20 years ago. That's when he was on with Jobs with the Future. So when you got to, after the 8 weeks of training in San Diego, where did you ship you to?
Vietnam.
Vietnam, Saigon, or?
No, Da Nang.
Was it hot when you got to, when you first got off the plane, what was like the first thought? Like, maybe I'm not in Kansas anymore, or?
I was so scared because I never saw so many helicopters firing. You could hear the rounds going because they make a sound, the rounds. At first, I didn't understand it, you know, but once you get there, then you learn, you know. One time, they were throwing mortars at us, and for some reason, I wanted to look up to see, and if it wasn't for this corporal, he pushed my head, my face right into the dirt. And then after it was over, he told me never, ever, you could lose your eyesight from the fragment. So you live and learn, right?
Yeah.
That's what it's all about in war. You have to learn. And the same guy who taught me made a mistake and died about 4 days later after I arrived because he told me never walk over a bridge. And he did, and he died.
The bridge blew up?
Yeah, the bridge blew up. No. But, you know, that war, you know.
How long were you there for?
3 months.
3 months?
Yeah. Now, didn't take too long for them to, you know, get me out of there. At least I'm home. But, you know.
Did you get shot?
Yeah, I got shot in the face. I lost majority of my teeth and my tongue. I'm half numb from my face. My leg, my shoulder, a little bit in my head fragments, and that's about it. But that's enough to send me home. That's all I cared about. I was on my way home, you know.
So you go home and you were hurt, right? You needed help. You needed to recover.
Yeah, I stood in the hospital over a year.
A year? You were in the hospital for 2 years? What was that like, Ray, would you just go in, just, what were you thinking? Was it just like, did you ever like feel like I should just give up? Would you like fighting for your life? Were you praying?
No, because while I was in there, there were guys coming in with brain injuries, no legs, no arms, some in a vegetable state where they can't move anything but their head. There were just too many things, you know. So as I saw those things, you know, then I thought to myself, I'm just lucky that one day I'll be able to walk and move around, but these people will never, ever be able to do that, you know. So, and then I was never really ever promoted, you know, like I went in as a private and I came home as a private. But it's because they lost me in the system, and then they gave me my stripes over here in Wadsworth by UCLA. Yeah, but and they were warm. Who cares?
In those 2 years you were in the hospital, that was a lot of rehabilitation for you?
Yeah, I had to learn how to talk again. They were running a lot of tests on my tongue, you know, to put needles in there and then turn on electricity to see if it will move. And my leg wounds were still wide open. It's just a lot of things that I went through, you know. I would come home. I came home one day in a cast, and as soon as I got home, I'm in the bathtub trying to remove it, and as soon as I got it off, it was like a volcano, you know, a pus.
Yeah.
It was hurting me so bad. I left that same day, got on the bus, and suffered all the way down to San Diego, you know, until they got me in there. Once they got me in there, they gave me a shot for the pain, so I wouldn't feel it no more, and they put me in ICU, you know. But
and were you in a veterans hospital in those 2 years?
No, I was still in the Marine Corps.
Oh, okay.
So I was under them. Even when they transferred me over here to Wadsworth, I was still a Marine at that time.
You know, that's heartbreaking, man. And that, you felt your leg, it hurt you so much that you just took it out, and it was like it was bad then, huh?
It was really, really infected. You know, they just had put that cast on me, and go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, just put. You know, you say that story, and I think back about this Facebook comment that you said, I think 2 weeks ago when you were at the Veterans Hospital and you were visiting, you were there, and it's sad. It made me sad because I never heard that. And then you said you were there to get your checkup, what was that comment that somebody said when somebody was at the hospital? I think they said, attention.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know this. This was the second time I had seen that done. They were bringing out a veteran, and he had an American flag draped over him. And as soon as someone saw him coming, they yelled out, attention. And we all stopped where we're at. We salute as he's passing by to honor him. And, you know, that's for us. It's kind of wakes you up, you know, thinking that it could have been you, you know, or it might be you someday. But for us, it's just an honor for him. Maybe he can't see it, but we can at least do it, you know.
Can I read one of your comments that you wrote on Facebook?
Yeah.
It's sad if I could just get through this without choking up here. It was, Ray wrote, "Today I was having a good day. I got the shots, but they did not work. So now they will be working on my lower back as I was checking out. Right inside where I went was this young man who had just come from Iraq 3 years ago. His body was so disfigured, and I had to say something to him. The young girl was his sister, and she was the one who took care of him. Yesterday, an LAPD officer died. A truck hit him and killed him. They showed a lot of officers following a car carrying his body. I thought, here is this young man who could not move any part of his body except his eyes. And I felt so bad for him, for his family. His mouth was wide open all the time. But where was his country that he fought for? Why were these veterans not given the same thing as that officer? He would have to live like that for the rest of his life. He was only 18 when he went to war. It would have been better if he had died. I walked up to him and said, 'Semper Fi,' and I held his hand. I picked up his hand, and he can only blink his eyes once for yes, two for no. He can't even anything through his mouth. They give it to him through a tube, and his belly, that's the way it would be for the rest of his life. I can't understand how someone like him could not receive the same treatment as that officer. He died for his life, and if there is a God, please take this young Marine home. Take this Marine home with you. I ask in the name of Jesus. It's just not fair." That was deep, Ray. I was like, damn.
That's what's up.
That's what's up. People don't know that a Marine, when he goes out there to fight for war, he's not there to, hey, like you see in the movies where everybody just ready and they say charge, you know, and they all go out to fight each other and it's a fair fight. It's not like that, man. Marines are doing the same thing that LAPD is doing over here. They're pretty much the police of the damn world, right or wrong.
But unlike the cops, they're actually going to a foreign land, and they're dealing with, you know, what we call maybe uncivilized people. But here, it's like almost law and order. So it's like, you know what I mean? It's way more extreme for a soldier to be, you know, torn to pieces as opposed to, you know, and taking sides. But nevertheless,
it was all a lie. It was just one big lie. You know, all they needed was to say that a patrol boat, a Vietnamese patrol boat, attacked a warship. You can imagine how small that patrol boat was compared to a warship that we had there. And that was the main reason so many men died, because that was Johnson's excuse to involve ourselves in such a war. And like in any war, you know, it hurts me when I talk about, you know, things that I see in my life. Like, I think I always ask them first. When I see a veteran all messed up, I ask them, "Are you married?" And when they tell me no, it makes me happy. Because if he has children, if he has a wife, and they have to see him like that for the rest of his life, I can't deal with it. I really can't. And when I go to the VA, just like a lot of other veterans, we are one. It doesn't matter what branch of service you are in. We are all Americans. We all did what we were supposed to do. But it still hurts when you see a father, a brother, uncle, nephew, whatever, and for them, they'll never, ever be able to do anything, ever. I don't even know how they feed them, you know. But that's what happens when you go to war. I just get mad because if an officer dies, I mean, you know, they spend so much money on gas and, you know, to go salute and take care of him, put his name on the highway or freeway or whatever. But when you see a vet like him, who's there? Who's really there? Nobody. You know? And that's just the way I feel, you know?
That's like the hardcore unspoken reality of war and the aftermath.
Yeah, because even now, the women, for the first time, we have a lot of women that lost their arms, their legs. They got shot in the face, just like I did. You know, this is the first time in history that we have ever had women hurt so bad. And the bad thing about it is no one even thinks about them.
Not even mention the news that women are getting blown up.
No, no.
But you see women at the VA too?
Yes, we do. We do. But, you know, it's not something that's common like the men, you know. But there are a lot of them out there, and most of them were in the Army. The ones that got hurt were mostly Army.
So when you were drunk on top of that pitcher mound and those kids came to practice, how old were you then, right before you started coaching?
Six.
So, when you were laying there,
I don't remember.
When you were laying there drunk, were you just thinking about how everything has ended up for you and you were just giving up?
No, I just gave up. That was it. I didn't care no more.
Were you drinking a lot back then?
Yeah.
Because when I known you, I don't think I ever seen you hold a beer.
Oh, yeah.
But I never seen him. I don't think I ever seen you with a beer. I mean, growing up, I thought you used to shoot up Diet Pepsi. I mean, I never seen you with a beer. I never seen you buzz. I was like, damn, man, that's what I want to be. Cool.
She doesn't remember, but I used to drink all week long. And then after I met the kids, then I had a reason to live, you know, to do something. So once I started with the kids, I didn't drink no more during the week. I cut all that out. But I was also involved in taking medication from the VA. So many of us soldiers that came from the projects, a lot of us signed up, you know, and we went. And I think, I don't know if you ever knew Ronnie Simpson, the Simpson family.
I know Ronnie the kid, his father.
Okay, yeah, I think Ronnie.
He had a daughter named Tisha, or Tisha Simpson.
Yeah.
But Ronnie looked like Richard Pryor.
Yeah, Ronnie Simpson, his brother, the one that you said looks like Richard Pryor.
Yeah,
he was the first one to leave from Pico Gardens to Vietnam. And then from there we had
Ronnie Chapman Bennett, and Leonard.
And then Henry, Wimpy, and a whole bunch of guys, you know. They all went to war and when everybody came back, we all came back as men. Because when we left, we were young, you know. We didn't have nothing else. We didn't have nothing else, you know. Just like you. You know.
All high school dropouts.
But at Andrew Jackson, the teachers, if you said something wrong, they would tell you, he would confront you and tell you, you want to do something about it? He would send everybody outside I said, me and you, okay, right now. They, or else, you know, those razor straps?
Yeah.
They used that. You know, it was a school where they used discipline with the fish if they had to, or the paddles, you know.
The school of hard knocks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think when I was in Utah Elementary in the late 70s, they still gave you swats. It was like a paddle with hose on it.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't still believe it. Like, if you tell kids now that, they say, shut up.
Sue.
I'll sue you.
Can't even touch a kid nowadays.
That's the priest.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I could never, or even our parents, you know, our parents used to whip us with those cords, you know, those extension cords.
Yeah,
you know,
the extension cord.
Or stick.
Or your mom would, she'll cut a strap from a tree, and you're crying while she's taking all the leaves out.
Yeah, I'm preparing you for it.
Preparing you.
You think this bad? Wait, that whipping you.
So your dad whipped you guys a lot in Fresno?
You know what? No, I really never really had a father.
Oh.
He was an old guy who just came home at 8, 9 o'clock in the night, and that was it. We really never saw him, you know, until we moved here. When we moved here, he was already, he got sick, and he had a heart attack, a stroke.
Yeah.
And that was it. But I never played with him, nothing, you know. He used to make some good money, but we never saw none of it, you know. We would go to church. If we went to church and we did okay, they would take us to the bank, and they would go ahead and pick out a couple of pair of pants or some shoes, you know, that people give. And then that we'd be all happy, you know. We didn't have to wear the same shoes, you know. Because that's the way my father was. I had this lady, Mrs. Brown. When I was young, my mom in the project, she would try to chase me to hit me. And then Mrs. Brown, she would catch me from my mom, and then I hit me with a broom. And my mom used to let her do that to me. And she goes, you better listen to your mom. But I don't think she's living with us anymore. But she, if I would have died in Vietnam, she would have been the last person I ever seen in the project. Because when I came home and I was getting ready to leave, I was crying because I knew when I got back, I was leaving for Vietnam that same day. And I was crying, and then she went with me all the way to the bus stop. The bus got there, and then she hugged me and gave me a kiss and said a little prayer and said goodbye to me. And that, you know, that's how close people in the project were in those days. You know, and I still miss those days. I go down there once in a while because I have two little girls that live on the little side.
Yeah.
And, you know, I go and, like, for Easter, I took them to Easter stuff, you know. So, yeah.
I remember one time, I think it was Halloween, You were dressed like Santa Claus. You were throwing candies at everybody. I was tripping out. I said, I was like, we're going trick or treating, and then he was dressed like Santa Claus. And he was throwing candies at people, and I was like, wow, okay, we got candies now. But that's one thing about you, man. That's why I think I love you so much, and I look up to you to this day because if you guys don't know, when I decided to be a comedian, it was inside your garage at Jackie Escalera, your son. Me, Rafa Moran, my brother Angel Esparza were inside the room, and Jackie just brought out a random comedy album. It was Bill Cosby, Sleeping with My Brother Russell, and I didn't even know. I never seen comedy before, but I remember listening to the whole thing, and it was late. It was like almost 10. I had to go home. And that was like profound for me. This motherfucker using profound. But it really changed my life. From then on, I heard the whole album. And let me tell you, Ray, up until then, you could have told me to tie my shoes and I'll forget to tie them. You could have told me math and I forgot it. I know from that day on, that hour of comedy, I never forgot. Like, I remembered it. I quoted it. I talked about it. And it just stuck to me, man. And ever since then, I wanted to be a comedian, and I finally am. Yeah, man. And I hope. Yeah, man. My dad never told me that. He never told me, like, my dad's like hardcore, you know, like, he will never, like, he hasn't told me to this day how proud he is of me. But let me tell you, man, when you set that up on New Year's Eve, that made me feel real good, man. I was like, I was listening to talk, and I was tearing up. And then you said, Felipe, you're number one because you're from the projects, fool. And it was funny, yeah. And to this day, man, I don't know. I'm glad that we all know why you talk that way, because growing up, I don't think I've met anybody that has ever said something that you said without talking like you. I think there was a guy named Michael Oregon. Remember Michael? He had a brother named Fernie. It was an alcoholic. Fernie. He used to imitate you so well. And so did Paco, Titi's brother. He used to go, lither, lither. But never in front of you. No, those pussies would never do it in front of you.
You would be surprised. All the names they call me.
What did they call you?
Kickstand. You know, when I had my leg, you know, was shorter, right?
Yeah.
So Derek Beal.
Oh, Derek Beal.
Yeah, and then he knew I ate with a spoon. So he goes, go get your dad that silver spoon of his. He doesn't use. It has to be silver. And he would mess with me all the time, you know. I you know, I miss Derek, you know. But and then once the guys started getting used to me, what they would do, because at that time, always like a spit came out of my mouth. So
it was like a Gallagher show.
So when I started talking, they would put something in front of their face to so it would be all over the paper and not the face. Yeah. But, yeah, they used to call me Sidewinder, all kinds of stuff.
A bunch of profound names.
Yeah, the guys over there, the director, and they say, hey, you know what? The grass needs to be watered. Just have a great walk around talking. Yeah, I get all done. Because so much, you know, at that time we'd come out. I had no control. It took me a long time.
Mm-hmm. Used to walk around with a bib, huh?
Yeah.
He was underage.
One day we went somewhere, I don't know where it was. We went somewhere and I forgot what TV they had, Select TV or something.
On TV, probably. It was ghetto cable.
Yeah, okay, well, that. And we left and then we came home and all of a sudden I look at the TV and there's porn on there. And they turned it off, right? And they were all laying on the floor. And I tell them, get up. They wouldn't get up. You didn't know why they wouldn't get up.
Because they were up.
Yeah, they were up.
Team jerk off.
Team twist.
Yeah. He was naked?
Who? Ray-Ban pulled him off. Oh, Derek?
Yeah.
Yeah, he got me mad and I told him, tell me this. You can't catch me. I grabbed a little butt, got all his clothes, threw him off, and threw him in the middle of the street. I made him go pick him up.
I remember Derek Beale and Lamar Repos.
Yeah.
These guys were pretty good. They were probably legends as far as athletics, man. Because Derek was a bad football player. I remember I would see Derek with his Roosevelt High School Letterman jacket with a football player, and it had wings on it. And I said, man, I wish I had that jacket so bad. I remember the Little Leagues, because when we were talking about Little League with Rafa and them, and we always talk about the best baseball players that ever grew up, you know, in the Pecan Park. But those legends, bro. Like, there was this guy named Bolly, yes, who could pitch like nobody's business. I mean, one time, this Mexican team called Guaymas, they wanted to take him with him to Mexico to play. But I don't know if he didn't want to go. But then there was this other kid named Ruben Molina.
Yeah.
He was bad, bro. This guy was 13, and he hit the ball 400 feet, bro, above the pavilion. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was like the thing growing up. If you hit the ball to the pavilion, you were the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was bad, man. I struck out playing T-ball. So did you have a good time here, Ray?
Yeah.
Talking?
Yeah, I've had a good time. Yeah. Good
we time don't know if this is going to be a Father's Day special. It might be a Memorial Day special. We never know. I want to thank you very much for speaking with me on my What's Up Fool podcast. He's my friend on Facebook, people. Ray Escalera, Vietnam vet, soldier.
Yeah.
You want anything to add? Do you want to share?
Yeah, let people know. I want to share something. To all the people from Pico Alisa that I've known my whole life, I'll never forget you. I hope everybody is doing the best they can in their lives. And as long as we have, you know, someone up there in heaven to watch over us, we'll be okay. Love everybody from Alisa Pico. Ray.
All right, people. That was Ray Escalera, my hometown hero, ladies and gentlemen. And Rodrigo Torres, what's up, fool?
What's happening? Very wonderful story, Mr. Escalera. It's a pleasure to be here. And also everything you did, man. It's a very remarkable little tale. From the bottom to the top.
quick question. When you started, what did you think? Like, what came to your head when you saw me on Last Comic Standing and somebody told you that's Felipe? Did you recognize me right away?
No.
Do you know who I am now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, when I saw you at the beach, okay, I didn't recognize you. You were coming toward me.
I came up to him like he was like Tom Cruise. Like, for real. Like, he was walking with his wife. I said, Ray!
Yeah, but once I seen him, I knew who he was. I knew who he was, you know. Yeah, I'm hoping that you have a great life in comedy and it continues to grow and go for you and your family, you know.
Yeah, man. So we got a couple of plugs here, people. I'll be at the San Jose Improv June 6th through the 8th. Brea Improv July 17th through the 20th. You're welcome to come, the Brea Improv. If you, Ray Escalera, you want to come to the show? We'll give you tickets to the show. You, Lupita, whoever you want to bring. And
where is that at?
Brea is, how far is Brea from Pico Rivera? 20 minutes from here. Off the 57. Yeah, go Japanese bender. Also, I get a couple of plugs. VoodooGlosco.com. They do the theme song. Felipe'sWorld.com. Follow Rodrigo Torres on Twitter. Check out WoundedWarriorProject.org and donate. WoundedWarriorProject.org and donate. And this money goes to all of them, all the veterans who come out there. And if you guys ever see a veteran walking around, just shake his hand, man, and tell him Ray Escalera sent you. And if you guys are listening here in Afghanistan or somewhere on a ship, on a Navy boat somewhere, somewhere on point, keeping guard, we love you. We appreciate you. Come home.
Keep your head
right.
up.
That's right. Come on home.
Let's go!